Harper Audio presents The Book of Laughter and Forgetting by Milan Kundera. Translated from the French by Aaron Asher. Performed by Richmond Hoxie. Part 1. Lost Letters. 1. In February 1948, the communist leader Klement Gottwald stepped out on the balcony of a Baroque palace in Prague to harangue hundreds of thousands of citizens massed in Old Town Square. That was a great turning point in the history of Bohemia, a fateful moment. Gottwald was flanked by his comrades, with Clementis standing close to him. It was snowing and cold, and Gottwald was bareheaded. Bursting with solicitude, Clementis took off his fur hat and set it on Gottwald's head. The propaganda section made hundreds of thousands of copies of the photograph taken on the balcony where Gottwald, in a fur hat and surrounded by his comrades, spoke to the people. On that balcony, the history of communist Bohemia began. Every child knew that photograph from seeing it on posters and in school books and museums. 4 years later, Clementis was charged with treason and hanged. The propaganda section immediately made him vanish from history and, of course, from all photographs. Ever since, Gottwald has been alone on the balcony. Where Clementis stood, there is only the balcony. Where Clementis stood, there is only the bare palace wall. Nothing remains of Clementis but the fur hat on Gottwald's head. 2. It is 1971, and Mirik says, "The struggle of man against power is the struggle of memory against forgetting." With this, he's trying to justify what his friends call carelessness, meticulously keeping a diary, preserving his correspondence, compiling the minutes of all the meetings where they discuss the situation and ponder what to do. He says to them, "We're not doing anything that violates the Constitution. To hide and feel guilty would be the beginning of defeat." A week before, at work with his crew on the roof of a building under construction, he looked down and was overcome by vertigo. He lost his balance, and his fall was broken by a badly joined beam that came loose. Then they had to extricate him from under it. At first sight, the injury seemed serious, but a little later, when it turned out to be only an ordinary fracture of the forearm, he was pleased by the prospect of some weeks of vacation and the opportunity, finally, to take care of things he had never found the time for. He ended up agreeing with his more prudent dom of speech, but the laws punished anything that could be considered an attack on state security. One never knew when the state would start screaming that this word or that was an attempt on its security. So he decided to put his compromising papers in a safe place. But first he wanted to settle the Zena business. He had phoned her in the town where she lived, about 100 kilometers from Prague, but was unable to reach her. That cost him 4 days. He got through to her only yesterday. She had agreed to see him this afternoon. Mirik's 17-year-old son protested. Mirik would be unable to drive with his arm in a cast, and he did have trouble driving. Powerless and useless in its sling, the injured arm swayed on his chest. To shift gears, Mirik had to let go of the steering wheel. 3. He had had an affair with Zena 25 years earlier, and all that remained from that time were some memories. One day she had appeared for a date, wiping her eyes with a handkerchief and sniffling. He asked her what was wrong. She told him that a Russian notable had died the day before, a certain Zanov, Arbuzov, or Mastrobov. Judging by the abundance of her tears, the death of Mastrobov had moved her more strongly than the death of her own father. Could that really have happened? Isn't it merely his present-day hatred that has invented those tears over Masterball's death. No, it had certainly happened. But of course it's true that the immediate circumstances which had made these tears real and believable baffled him now, and that the memory had become as implausible as a caricature. All his memories of her were like that.